It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Drops the throw, steps up, floats a bomb up the right seam, looking for Anderson. He's got it. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. Touchdown. Sam Darnold dials it up to Robbie Anderson. 92 yards.
Anderson, too much deflected.
Bell into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder, 85 yards.
Pass thrown, there was contact with the quarterback, and it's incomplete. They got pressure on Prescott. It was Adams who came blitzing in.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know who that's?
The Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studios, this is Play Like a Jet, and it is the Jets Raiders pregame report. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. Dr. Stoller will be here to talk about the injury report. My brother Craig will drop by to give his NFL gambling picks. Ed Valley from Empire Weather will drop by and talk about the weather. So we are going to have a whole pregame extravaganza, and we will start with the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at JetsInsider.com. And above all of that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. Chris, let's talk about the keys to the game with the Jets and the Raiders. And this is a really interesting matchup because this is the modern NFL where the passing offense dominates. But I think that one of the key matchups here is the Jets' elite run-stuffing defense and the Raiders' rushing offense, which has been one of the best in the league. I think if the Jets can shut down the Raiders rushing the ball, they're going to have a really good chance to win this game. And that sounds weird to say in the year 2019, but I think it bears out if you look at the particulars of this game.
Yeah, this is a real interesting game and matchup. I think it's actually a perfect matchup to give us like a barometer on where the Jets are, because the Raiders are better than I expected them to be, but they're still not as good as I think a lot of people are making it out to seem that they are. But I think that that's a perfect opponent to give us a gauge on where the Jets actually are, because the last 2 weeks, you know, they got wins against the Giants in Washington, two other bottom five teams. Obviously, they played the Patriots and got embarrassed, but the Patriots are among the best teams. So this is more of a I still think the Raiders are a middle-of-the-pack team. I think this will give us a good gauge on where the Jets are. But as you said, everyone's focused on Derek Carr and how he's playing, because he has been really efficient with how he's playing. But it all stems from their running game and from Josh Jacobs and everything around there, and the Jets being the number one run defense right now. Part of that is also probably because of how easy it is for teams to pass against them at times. So that kind of, like, you know, it's a little bit hidden. Like, yeah, they're great against the run, but he can pass on them real easily, so why bother running it on them? But if they can keep Josh Jacobs bottled up, then all of a sudden it'll make a Derek Carr work more and not be able to be as efficient and maybe see some more mistakes. That's going to be a huge key. It's also going to be a huge key to watch him out of the backfield in the receiving game, because he can be dangerous in that area as well. But if they can stifle the run, I think you could see the Raiders really struggle and are not be as good as they have been in recent weeks, efficient-wise in the passing game, and that's what they're going to need to happen to be able to get this W this week.
That's the other thing too, Chris, that I think is a key to this. The Jets got pressure on Dwayne Haskins. They got pressure on Daniel Jones. Now, to be fair, Daniel Jones did have four touchdown passes, but I think a lot of what's been going on with Derek Carr is, as you said, he's been very efficient. He hasn't been flashy. He hasn't been making crazy, sparkling plays, but he's been able to lead an efficient offense with a really strong rushing attack. If you take that rushing attack away, and now all of a sudden Derek Carr has to operate and make more plays than he's used to having to make, that could make for an uncomfortable day. And if you can get some pressure on him when he does go back to pass, it goes without saying that it'll make it a lot more difficult, especially since the Raiders don't really have a lot of great weapons in that passing game.
Yeah, it's really Tyrell Williams, and that's about it. I mean, Darren Waller looks like he's coming along nicely, and he's a weapon there. But it's those two, and then Josh Jacobs out of the backfield. There's nobody else that scares you, and those guys aren't terrifying either. So if they can bottle up the run game and kind of make them press and make everything in the pass game not so easy and clean as it has been these last couple weeks for them, then I think you could see more of bad Derek Carr, and you could see more struggles and mistakes there made. So that is going to be a huge key there.
On the offensive side of the ball, obviously number one key, and it's going to be this way for the rest of the season, Sam Darnold, no big mistakes. Cannot afford them. He had the one big mistake against the Redskins last week, that terrible interception, but the Redskins were not good enough to cash in on it. The Raiders are a better team. They might be able to cash in on some Darnold mistakes, so he cannot afford to make them. He has shown you all the traits that you want to see from a franchise quarterback, but he's got to cut out the careless mistakes. And as I was explaining to my father on the phone the other day, the thing with Darnold is he's going to throw interceptions. That's just the way that he's wired. You saw this with guys like Andrew Luck. You saw it with Tony Romo. Guys that are willing to take chances and trust themselves are going to throw interceptions. The key with Darnold is going to be, can you go back on film and say to yourself as you watch it, I see what he was trying to do here. If you can go back and look and say, okay, he made this read. He trusted himself a little bit too much. He tried to throw the ball into too tight of a window, or the defensive back made a really good play, or there was miscommunication on the route. If you can go back and look and see what Sam Darnold was trying to do, then those are interceptions that you can live with. What you can't live with is interceptions like the one that we talked about against the Redskins last week, where you have no idea what he was trying to do. He was off balance. His mechanics were terrible. He was throwing into coverage. There was absolutely no explanation or justification for it. Those are the interceptions that you want to get out of here. The ones that I talked about before that you can at least figure out what he was trying to do, those are going to happen, and those are the ones that you're going to have to live with going forward with Darnold. But I think those are okay because they will be more than counterbalanced by great plays. And again, when you do stuff like that, when you take chances like that, a lot of times they're going to work out for you. It's the low percentage plays that result in turnovers. Those are the ones that you want to get rid of. So I think if Sam Darnold can continue to limit those terrible mistakes, those unjustifiable throws, and he can be smart about giving up on plays when he needs to, and he can continue to make plays in and out of the pocket, I think that that's going to be a huge key to the Jets' success against the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. If he plays a game similar to the one he did against the Giants, or if he plays similarly to the way he played against the Redskins last week, minus that one terrible throw, I think the Jets have a really good chance to win.
Yeah, limit is the key word there. And when we're talking about a, you know, a one game sample size just for this game, you can say, okay, we don't want turnovers. But with Sam Darnold, he's going to make these mistakes sometimes, and I'm good with it because you don't want to take his aggressiveness away from him. But he makes some special plays when he's doing that stuff. And sometimes he makes a special play doing something where it's like he shouldn't be doing that, and then he will do the same exact thing, and it'll end up being a mistake. I can kind of point to, and look, it's similar to you watch Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson, as great as he is, he holds on to the ball way too long a lot of the times. But the reason why he does that, and you don't really want to take that away from him, is because of how much it pays off for him sometimes. Because so many times it's like he should have gotten rid of the ball. Oh, wait, how did he manage to shake free? Oh, man, he just hit Will Fuller for an 80-yard touchdown now. And so it's like, yeah, some problems are going to come from holding on to the ball that long at times, but he's also going to make game-breaking plays by doing that. And so when Sam Darnold is about to get sacked and he's going down and he just flicks the ball up and he completes it to Jamison Crowder for a first down, you're like, wow, that was special. And then when he tries to do the same thing versus the Patriots and it gets picked off and run back for a touchdown, yeah, you're going to have to live with that and die with it. But you want to limit it. You want to get him in to know when to take that chance. And that's going to come with time. Again, he's only 22 years old, so he's going to learn to pick his spots better. But yeah, that play against Washington, that interception, that was one of those times where he would have been better off just throwing it at the feet of the running back. Instead, he tried to throw it, and it went a little too high. He went up to get it and then decided it was too high for me, but been to somebody else. But it was just a bad pass, I think. So, but those are going to happen, especially when he's this young. The key here is you want to try to limit it and have him pick his spots. And, again, that's something that will come with time. It even happened, you know, Peyton Manning was throwing turnovers left and right his rookie year, and then he learned to get better, pick his spots on certain things. And even when his play completely plummeted at the end of his career, he still wasn't making, like, he was making terrible throws, but they weren't turning into interceptions as much because he still knew when to try things and when not to. So that will come with time. But for this week, yeah, they're going to need – if they're going to need beat the Raiders, they're going to need to limit those mistakes to one turnover probably at most.
Like I said, the justifiable mistakes versus the unjustifiable mistakes, that's really what you're looking at with Sam Darnold. And that is what you're going to have to do in terms of trying to beat the Raiders. You're going to have to be okay with the justifiable mistakes, but limit the unjustifiable mistakes to as little as possible. Hopefully zero, but – if it's not zero, one should be the maximum in this particular matchup and all matchups going forward, really. Another key to this is going to be creativity from Adam Gase. We saw a little bit of it against the Redskins. We talked about using Le'Veon Bell in the slot. We talked about giving more carries to Bilal Powell. Both of those things seem to work. Ryan Griffin getting more targets, that seemed to work too. Things like that, and just feeling out the game and understanding who's making an impact and who isn't and adjusting accordingly, that's what Adam Gase is going to have to do in this game, because the Raiders are a much better team than the teams that they've played the last couple of weeks. And if they want a chance to win, Gase is going to have to be able to have a good feel for this game and understand how to adjust when things are going better than you expected, using something sparingly, maybe use it more often. And when things aren't going as well as you hoped, using something less that you had planned to use a lot. I know that this is something that Adam Gase has struggled with, not only this season, but during his time in Miami. He's got to get better at it, and this week he's certainly going to have to be better at it if they expect to beat a team like the Raiders, who, granted, are not the Patriots or the Ravens, but they are a team in playoff contention, and so this is a different level than playing the Giants or the Redskins.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said earlier, this will be a good gauge, a good barometer for the Jets, because the Raiders, I still think, are right around average, maybe a little bit better, maybe a little bit worse. We'll see how it shakes out at the end. But that's what you want to see the Jets up against right now. You don't want to see them against the bottom five teams. You don't want to see them against the top five teams, because that it's going to skew things. You give them an average, around average team, and that's going to give us a good test, a good showing of what the Jets really are right now. But, yes, absolutely. This is going to be – this could be a key to the game every single time Adam Gase coaches a team, because we've seen differences. We've seen him have really good games. Sometimes it's about execution. I talked about this last week. But there's things that he needs to do. He needs to use Le'Veon Bell more out of the backfield, getting Bilal Powell some more touches. We've seen the last couple weeks that, you know, since Darnold had that talk with them, they're using him more on the move. And again, I was thinking about this last night while I was watching Deshaun Watson. We need to change how we evaluate quarterbacks now, because a large part of it, for so long, we've sat there and the biggest thing you want to look for is how a quarterback does passing from the pocket. Well, now you see quarterbacks that are doing the most damage and tearing up the league are able to buy extra time, dance around, and do damage outside of the pocket. The Pat Mahomes, the Russell Wilsons, Deshaun Watsons, even Tom Brady was always so good at moving around inside the pocket and shifting that pocket, moving around. So the idea of having that quarterback that's just going to stand in the pocket, stand tough, and deliver that throw – that seems to be a little outdated now, and Adam Gase needs to continue doing more with Sam Darnold on the move with him, because that's where he's best at. getting him rolling out and getting him on the move, getting him outside and doing all those types of things. So if Gase can build the offense around that and have that as part of the system, that will go a long way. And the Raiders' defense is solid, but their secondary is kind of a mess. So this is a game, especially got to factor in the West Coast traveling east to a 1 p.m. start. This is a game that they should be able to move the ball and score points on this defense a lot. So we're going to have to pay close attention. Adam Gase is going to have to call a good game and do a lot of things that they've been successful over these last couple weeks with.
Final key to the game, Chris, the offensive line. There have been a lot of changes due to injury, due to poor performance. Compton coming in and taking the place of Brian Winters ended up being a little bit of a blessing. He played fairly well against the Redskins, and this is nothing against Winters. He was trying to play with an awful injury, and a lot of times you just got to be able to tell yourself that it's okay to sit down and that it's okay to not try to be as tough as you want to be, because Brian Winters, I think, had his play negatively impacted in a significant way by the fact that he was trying to play with this terrible injury. Compton is by no means Marshall Yanda, but he has some starting experience and you can plug him in there for a couple of games. So that certainly was nice. Jonathan Harrison hasn't been great by any stretch, but he's been better than Ryan Khalil. So it's kind of been addition by subtraction with some of these injuries. I'm curious to see if the offensive line is able to pick up where they left off the last 2 weeks, because Chuma Edoga struggled mightily early on in the game, but then he came out with the injury. Shell came in and he played a little bit better. If they can at least be passable against the Raiders, it will help Sam Darnold a lot, but it will also help this rejuvenated New York Jets rushing attack if they continue to do what they did last week and split the carries, because I think that Bilal Powell showed you that if he gets a handful of carries, he can make a positive impact. And even if Le'Veon Bell isn't being Le'Veon Bell, you throw all of that together, and then, as we said, use Le'Veon Bell in the slot a little bit, maybe mix in Josh Adams, maybe throw in a carry or two for Ty Montgomery, even maybe an end around to him or something like that. And this goes along with the creativity that we were talking about. And then all of a sudden, the offensive line goes from being one of the worst in the league to bad, but at least workable.
Yeah, the stuff with Winters is this is basically his entire career. And this explains why he's so up and down in his career. And it's the downs are probably he's playing through injury. And it's incredibly admirable, but it works against him too. Because at a certain point, when you're playing as bad as he was and hurt that bad, you should remove yourself so you can get healthy, and it's kind of hurting your team. It's admirable to want to go out there and keep playing through the pain, but at a certain point, it hurts your team. So, and it's like his shoulder is like, destroyed. There's like no shoulder there. It's just an arm hanging off. A healthy Tom Compton is going to be better than that. The Brandon Shell coming in and for Doga and playing better. But remember, Shell got benched earlier and he was struggling. This happens sometimes, just like we talked about with cornerbacks earlier. Sometimes that happens with the offensive linemen too. But that it's going to be very important for the run game. Even when Le'Veon Bell's in there, defenses still show him respect and respect him there, which should open up more things in the passing game. And even if they're getting – offensive linemen's getting beat against the pass rush, if the play call – if the design of the offense has Darnold rolling out instead of him – feeling like he has to hang in there and then throw some off-balance throw by jumping off his back foot. If he doesn't feel he needs to stay in there and he can just roll out and roll three, because that's built into the design of the play, that'll make it, much better for the offense. And okay, if you got beat because Darnold was already rolling out anyway. So, but this is always when the offensive line's as bad as this is, it's always going to be a key to the game. Every single week, protect Sam Darnold at least enough for him to be able to move off his spot and make a play from elsewhere.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
And that'll wrap up our keys to the game. So with that, let's jump back into the mailbag with John Flesh. He says, did the Jets actually find a late round steal from Rutgers nonetheless with Bless Austin? He looks like he could develop into a quality starter heading into 2020. What are your thoughts? It's still early. He's only played a couple of games. He's looked good so far. In a lot of ways, he is what was advertised. He was a guy that was brought in under the guise of somebody who has incredible ranginess, great length, great athleticism, pretty good coverage skills. The only downside with him was the injuries. He had the two ACL tears. He played part of one game over the course of 2.5 years. It looked like he was going to be on IR the whole season, and this was going to be a redshirt year. These were all the reasons that he was drafted in the sixth round instead of, say, the second or third round. And you heard Jamal Westerman talk about this on the podcast, obviously a fellow Rutgers alum, when he said that Blessin' Austin, and he's not saying that he's going to be as good as this guy, but as far as his physical traits, he reminds you a lot of Antonio Cromartie. Now, the thing with Blessin' Austin to keep in mind is, even if down the stretch he plays well and you think that he's going to potentially be a starter for you in 2020, you still have to proceed with caution, because any cornerback who's had those injuries at such a young age is somebody that's always going to be a ticking time bomb. Now, it's possible, and Dr. Stoller has talked about this, that Austin could go on to have a really good career and not have major injury problems. Certainly a possibility, but he is more likely than most to have something reoccur because those ACLs could put extra pressure on the knees. So it's something where even if you're going into 2020 with him as the projected starter, if he continues to play like this down the stretch, you're still going to want to have insurance there just in case something goes wrong. You would say that for anything, but especially for a guy with his level of injury. So he was a guy that I think had his defect that made him drop to the sixth. In a lot of cases, it could be age. In a lot of cases, it could be that a guy doesn't have elite athleticism. In a lot of cases, it could be somebody who had off-the-field issues. In Austin's case, it was because he had the injuries, and that's why he wasn't a day one or day two pick. And a spot like the sixth round is perfect for a guy like Bless Austin, because he's somebody that you think has the talent to be a meaningful player, but he comes with that risk. And when you go through rounds 5 through 7, you're right around what you would get if you were to sign an undrafted free agent. He's not somebody that you would risk a 1st through 4th on, but once you get to the 6th, that's a swing worth taking. So for all the crap that we've given Mike Maccagnan, Bless Austin is the type of player that you like to see a team pick as a late round flyer. Whether or not he works out, I'm not sure, but I will say that he does have the physical skills to do it, and he has certainly shown over the first couple of games that he's capable of playing in the NFL. Will he be able to keep up this level of play? I'm not sure. Will he be able to stay healthy? Who knows? But right now, it's looking like a pick that was certainly worth taking a shot at in the 6th round.
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to bounce around and go a little all over the place here, but first thing to keep in mind, they played the Giants in Washington. Not exactly the most explosive offenses. So we're going to see him tested a little more in coming weeks here.
I will say one thing, though, Chris. The Jets played the Dolphins, and if you recall, Darrell Roberts was horrendous against a really bad Dolphins team. So if nothing else, Blessin' Austin the last couple weeks has shown us that he could be a step above Darrell Roberts. Not saying a ton, but given what the Jets have to work with at cornerback, that's at least something to hang your hat on, no?
Absolutely. But this leads me into my next point. So I played into that perfectly. Because remember what happened when Nate Harrison took over for Trumaine Johnson, and he had a great first game or two, and then he came crashing down back down to earth. Darrell Roberts has also done this before, where he came in a part-time role and got everyone saying, hey, maybe this guy could be really good. And then he got a really big contract, and now everyone's like, get this guy off my team. So this happens. I see this a lot in the NBA. You see guys come out nowhere, and everyone's like, who is this guy? And then for like 2-3 weeks, they're just tearing it up, and then you never hear from them again. And this happens with cornerbacks a decent amount too. So you need to see a lot more of it. Now, to go swing around back in talking praise or defensive, bless Austin. Everything I heard about him, because when he was drafted, everything I was told and heard about him was this guy has all the physical talent and ability of the world. He just struggled and hasn't been able to stay healthy. And then I went to try to look at like what tape and film I could get from him from Rutgers. And there was like nothing because he played that little. And I was just like, all right, I'm just going to have to go off everybody's word here. And it doesn't sound like he's going to be able to stay healthy anyway. But everybody I talked about this kid's physical talent as being there. He had everything that needed to. He just needs to be able to stay healthy. So from that standpoint, there's a lot to be excited about. Go ahead and get excited about him. But we need to see more than a week and a half before we can really plant that flag. And then also, of course, he's going to need to stay healthy because the injury concerns are real. So he could play great for a handful of games. If those injury concerns come back up, it's going to be a problem as well. But, yeah, nobody should really be too surprised based on the way that people talked about him that he's looked good because people raved about his talent and physical ability. He just wasn't able to stay healthy. So we'll have to wait and see if he can stay healthy and if this shakes out. But just in general, this isn't about Bless Austin. If you see a cornerback play well for a game or two, pump the brakes on him because you're going to need it over a lot longer stretch to really get a good gauge.
Next question comes in from Joe at Soul Brother. He says, what food are you guys looking forward to most on Turkey Day? By the way, happy Thanksgiving, gentlemen. May the wolf gods bless you with fried turkey and apple pie a la mode. He also says, is it me or do players under Gase seem to get injured at a faster rate than normal? I'm sure there are stats to prove or disprove this, but come on, it looks really weird. Also, it's Friday, and this was the best I could do. I didn't feel like looking up stats. That's totally fair, Joe. You don't want to be looking up stats. I totally get it. So let's talk about this, Chris. First of all, Thanksgiving preferences. I love everything. I actually like the dark meat better than the white meat on the turkey, but I'll eat both. I love the canned cranberry sauce, and I love the fresh cranberry sauce. I'm a big fan of stuffing. I'm a big fan of sweet potato. I'm also a huge fan of pies, whether it's apple, whether it's blueberry, whether it's cherry, peach, any of them. Bring them on. I love them on Thanksgiving. So what I'm saying is I love all the Thanksgiving food, and while it's not necessarily my favorite food, there's nothing I'd rather eat on Thanksgiving than those foods, so I'm looking forward to all of it. The second part of this, as far as Adam Gase, yeah, it is weird. We've talked about this before. There seem to be a lot of injuries with him. It was the same problem in Miami, whether it's practice habits or a combination of practice habits and bad luck. I'm not entirely sure, but I do think that it's worth investigating because it's very odd. When it happens once or twice, maybe it's a coincidence. When it happens for 4 years when a guy's a head coach, then all of a sudden you really got to start to ask some questions.
Yeah, I'll start with the second part there. If it was just this year, if we're just judging the injuries thing of just this season, I could easily just be like, it's just one of those seasons. It's a fluky season. I mean, the Chargers seem to go through this every season, but the Jets don't have this type of injury, bad luck, but it happens sometimes. Sometimes it's just a fluky season. The problem is this happened in Miami too at a pretty similar rate. So it, after all these years, it's hard to not think that there's some reason something Adam Gase is doing that's causing this or at least leading and contributing to this. If it was just this season, I'd be like, yeah, it could just be one of those years. We don't know. But we have the Miami years to go back on, and it was the same thing there. So the common denominator there is Adam Gase. I don't know what it is. Like you said, maybe his practice habits. Maybe he's trying to get guys back too soon. I don't know what it is. But it to say that it's not has nothing to do with Adam Gase would be foolish because it happened in Miami and that's the common denominator here. So he's got to look at this. Joe Douglas has to look at this. They have to try to figure out what the problem is, what it is that's causing this. and see if they can address this in the offseason and change something. As far as Thanksgiving, I am a stuffing and sweet potato guy. Those are the two things I care about. I like other stuff, but go ahead and get lost. I don't care. You give me stuffing and sweet potatoes, and I am a happy, happy man. I'm more than happy to go ahead and eat some apple pie with some ice cream on top later for dessert. But I'm also like just as likely to eat up a bunch of stuffing and sweet potatoes at dinner, and then 2 hours later go right back for more sweet potato and stuffings too. I like the turkey, especially fried turkey. Bring it, give it to me. But it's all about the stuffing and sweet potatoes for me. That's what this entire day is about.
I'm totally with you, Chris. It's about football, and it's about food, and it's about family, the three Fs. Friend of mine used to like to text me, and this was a tradition we had. We would text each other this, and we would say, Happy Lions Cowboys Day, because that's a big part of Thanksgiving tradition, is watching the football games and stuffing yourself with all kinds of food. And it doesn't matter what it is you prefer, because like you said, Chris, I'm like you. I love sweet potatoes. I love stuffing, but I love all the other stuff too. So no matter what it is, I'm just going to keep piling it on and piling it on and watching the football games. And then what I do, of course, is after all the football games are over, I go for a really long walk just to kind of let everything settle. And then I call one of my friends on the West Coast that I haven't talked to in a while. That's generally my Thanksgiving tradition. But the food, of course, is the biggest part of Thanksgiving. The family is a big one. The football is a big one. But you got to find what it is you like, and you got to stuff that right down your gullet on Thanksgiving. That's a big part of what the holiday is all about.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in for me, and it's about the injury report. I want to know what's going on with the injuries on this team. And so for that, we turn to our expert on all things medical, 35-year orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Steven Stoller. Doc, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm cold, but other than that, I'm pretty good.
Yes, it is cold.
It sounds like CJ Mosley might be doing better too. What do we know about him? There's been some updates in his status.
CJ Mosley recently had PRP injections, presumably into the area where he has a sports hernia. And he said that if it's not successful within the next couple of weeks, that he'll probably have to undergo surgery. A PRP injection is part of regenerative medicine, which is a new field that uses biological tissues or factors, either from humans, animals, or microorganisms. And these tissues or growth factors can help an injured part of the body heal itself where it's unable to do it on its own. My feeling is that regenerative medicine should be used more frequently in sports injuries. And if they waited several weeks or months to inject CJ Mosley with PRP when the body is already not able to heal a specific area, I don't know why they wouldn't do it earlier, just as a adjunct to assist the body in healing itself and maybe reduce some of these, you know, chronic injuries or need for surgical repair or intervention.
Let's talk about Daryl Roberts. There was talk that he was going to play this week. Now it looks like he's going to miss another week. What could be the setback here?
You know, apparently his injury is more significant than, you know, than initially thought. So, if you have an area that's in a calf that's trying to heal because it was partially torn and he goes out, even just walking on it can stretch it and irritate it and, you know, prevent the healing process or slow it down, that could be a reason why he's, you know, not going to play on Sunday.
The new injury that everybody's talking about is Chuma Adoga. What's going on with him?
Chuma Adoga has an ankle sprain, and as you know, I mentioned in the past, like it would be just dealing with the swelling and pain. And when the swelling is down and the, and pain management is adequate, he could return to play with a functional brace. You know, like a lot of athletes do. But again, it would determine, you know, how much pain he's in and how much swelling. But once that's under control, then, you know, with the brace, he would be able to play while protecting the ligaments in its healing process.
There were three players that you had some interesting tidbits about before we started recording. Henry Anderson, Kelvin Beachum, and Alex Lewis, all of whom are listed as questionable for this game, but it looks like they're all going to play. What did you notice about these three?
Well, Henry Anderson, his shoulder, you know, he's listed as questionable. He's been listed for a while for an AC separation, which was supposed to be minor, so assuming a grade one. But if he indeed continues to have pain and is symptomatic throughout the season, there's a possibility that he may require a minor arthroscopic procedure, or if it's more severe, a reconstruction of his AC joint in his shoulder. Kevin Beachum, you know, high ankle sprains take a long time to heal, so I think he's just, you know, struggling with that. Given enough time and rest, I think that should be able to heal without a problem. Alex Lewis is listed for his elbow and shoulder, and I did not see him playing with a elbow brace or a protective sleeve, but I noticed that on his shoulder, he's wearing a shoulder harness, which was the same shoulder harness that Brian Cashman and Winters were wearing prior to them requiring surgery on their shoulder. So I guess it's a possibility that at the end of the season that he may require surgery as well.
One last thing, Doc, you wanted to talk about Blessin Austin. No lingering injuries that we know of at this point, but he has had the torn ACL. So what's going on with him?
Well, I think what's going on is you can see that he's doing extremely well coming off, you know, two serious injuries. And, you know, I'd like to bring up the point that, you know, you can have really excellent, successful surgery, but unless you have very good physical therapy and rehabilitation, and you have a highly motivated patient, that you will not have a good outcome. And I think that Bless Austin is a good example of a highly motivated individual that was able to return from, you know, two significant injuries.
Doc, a short injury report this week, but that's a good thing, because if there aren't that many injuries to discuss, that means that the Jets are at least relatively healthy heading into this matchup later today against the Oakland Raiders. Thanks so much for joining me, as always. Really appreciate it. For those that want to reach out and talk to you about injuries or about the Jets in general or boxing, you and I are always down to talk boxing. How can they get a hold of you?
On Twitter, I'm Stephen Stoller, MD, or The Aging Athlete, also on Twitter.
Thanks, Doc. Now let's jump back into the mailbag with Sean Stalker. He says, Scott and the very big deal, Chris Nimbley, Jamal Adams has been the team's best pass rusher lately. How good do you think he could be as a blitzer if this team had a really good pass rusher on the D-line or at edge that offenses had to scheme around while also trying to worry about Jamal Adams if he was blitzing too? Yeah, for sure. That would be an incredible weapon to have. And if you then had Quinnen Williams on the defensive line and the rest of the guys on that D-line who have been really good, and you have a blitzing Jamal Adams, and say you add in a guy like Yannick Ngakoue, for example, since we talked about him before, that would be a really scary prospect for an opposing offensive coordinator, because how do you stop all these guys at once? It seems like an impossible task. So I agree. I think that if you can get somebody in here to be across from Jordan Jenkins, who I think they're going to try to keep and I would like to see stay here, and you have a real top-flight edge rusher to go with what you've built on that D-line and then Jamal Adams, it's going to open up things not just for Jamal Adams, but for a lot of the other guys. And that's the thing that I find interesting with Jamal Adams now, is that throughout the rest of the season, teams are going to have to account for him in a way that maybe they didn't realize they had to before. And so the extra attention he's going to get should open up some things for some other players. Jordan Jenkins will probably get some more potential sacks. You may see some more potential sacks from guys on the defensive line, because if all of a sudden you have opposing teams treating Jamal Adams like he's a glorified edge rusher and they have to pay him extra attention, that's going to open things up for those guys. So I think that's a really interesting point, Sean. I do think that if you put a really good edge rusher in there and you then have Adams and the rest of the players surrounding him, plus of course Mosley and Williamson coming back to do a lot of the dirty work inside, could be a really scary defense, and it could unleash Jamal Adams in a way that we've never seen a safety in the NFL be deployed in terms of pass rushing, because he's already become an elite pass rusher for a safety. Not saying an elite pass rusher overall, but for a safety. But I would love to see the level that he could get to if they did add an elite pass rusher off of the edge to go with the other pieces.
Yeah, if you gave them, you know, an elite pass rusher off that, if you put, you know, a Von Miller, Myles Garrett type somebody in there, that's obviously opposing offenses are going to have to pay attention to those guys, which would free up Jamal even more. It will be interesting to see how opposing offenses handle this going forward, because I do think part of Jamal's success over the last couple of weeks is teams just not expecting him to be blitzed as much, especially last week, how much he was blitzed. So teams are going to start adjusting for that. So maybe you see some of Jamal's effectiveness dip a little bit in some areas because they're paying more attention. But as you said, that would then open things up for Jordan Jenkins or even Quinnen Williams more. So even if Jamal starts being a little less effective just on his role, what he's doing as far as the sacks go, that doesn't mean he's actually going to be less effective, because it could open things up for other players. So, and then if you can add a pass rusher, then I think you see them probably blitz Jamal a little less, go back to having him roam a little bit more and pick their spots when they blitz him. Kind of like back in the day, I always used to say about how I thought the Jets should have blitzed David Harris more, because David Harris was so efficient on his blitzes and was a sneaky good blitzer when they blitzed him. They just didn't blitz him all that much. So I think you would go back to that, where they go back to playing him more how they used to, but they would still just pick their moments to blitz him. And if you have a top flight edge rusher to pair with him, then they're going to focus on that guy every single snap, which will open it up for Jamal to sneak through every once in a while, only more. But again, if the opposing offenses focus on Jamal blitzing, he might not get the sacks that he's gotten these last couple weeks, but that will free up other people more.
And now it's Sunday, so let's try to make you a couple of bucks. That way, you'll be able to spend it on some tickets to go to whatever event you want anywhere at any time at a reasonable price. And you can do that with the Vivid Seats mobile app, which you can download right now. If you use the promo code OVERTIME, you get yourself up to $100 off on your very first purchase. You can go to a Jet game if you want, or you can go to a different sporting event, perhaps hockey or basketball. You can go see the Radio City Christmas Spectacular, since it's just about Christmas time. You can go to a wrestling show, a concert, anything you want. Just use the promo code OVERTIME when you download the Vivid Seats mobile app, and you'll get up to $100 off on your very first purchase. And you'll have plenty more money to use on that very first purchase if you take the gambling advice of my next guest, my brother Craig, who is our gambling lines expert and who just had his 7-week winning streak snapped last week. Craig, a bit of a rough go, but I think that you're going to be able to rebound this week. I have faith in you.
What's going on, Scott? Yeah. I mean, listen, can't win them all. I was due to have a bad week, and that is exactly what I had. I lost all my picks, lost my teaser, rough goings, but going to try to shake it off this week and bounce back and hopefully continue on and have a nice winning streak the rest of the season.
Well, think of that as your Sam Darnold versus the Patriots week, and now you're going to bounce back, and you're going to have a week like Sam Darnold had against the Giants or the Redskins. In fact, since I mentioned it, why don't we start with the Jets, Craig? Who do you like in that game?
So this is my favorite pick of the week. I haven't picked the Jets games the best this year, but I have a really strong feeling about this one. And again, I know the Jets have struggled this year. I know their last two opponents that they've beaten weren't exactly the best, the Redskins and the Giants. But Darnold seems like he's starting to play better. I just see a tough game here for Oakland. They're traveling across the country, and Jets have a little bit of momentum going, +3 at home. I actually love the Jets in this one, +3 against Oakland. That's going to be my first pick.
You can never underestimate the toll that it takes on a team to travel across the country. We saw the Jets adversely affected by this in the opposite direction many times. So I think there's a very good chance that that'll happen to the Raiders. I think the Raiders are a team that is better than the Jets, at least on paper, and they perform better than the Jets. But I also think that they've benefited from beating a lot of bad teams. This is not to say the Jets are a great team, but this should be an interesting test for them this week on the road, going all the way across the country. So I like the pick, Craig. I'm kind of on the fence about it. I'm not sure which way to go, but I think that it's certainly a respectable choice. Who do you have for your second pick this week?
My second pick here is going to be Atlanta, -3.5 at home versus Tampa. Kind of a shitty matchup here. Both teams obviously struggling. Although, kind of like the Jets, I see a little role here for Atlanta. I think they're going to go on a bit of a run here at the end of the season. Obviously, they're 3-7. They're not going anywhere, but I like them -3.5 against Tampa. I think they'll handle them pretty easily at home here, so I do like Atlanta on this one.
Atlanta is still mathematically alive for the playoffs, which seems impossible, but it's true. So who knows? If they win this game and go on a run, I guess it could be kind of like the year that the Jets thought they were dead in 2009 and ended up surging at the end and getting into the playoffs with a little help from Peyton Manning laying down and Cincinnati laying down. But this could be the start of that if Atlanta gets their act together. Who do you have for your third pick, Craig?
My third pick here is going to be, this is the biggest game of the season for this team. Absolutely huge game. They lose, they're probably not going anywhere. So I really have a feeling the Rams, Monday Night Football, real tough matchup against maybe arguably the hottest team in football right now, the Ravens, and Lamar Jackson, who could be the MVP right now. So might be crazy that I'm going against them, but it just seems to me, Rams, I still have faith in them. You know, almost won the Super Bowl last year. They still have a lot of talent. I know they struggled this year, but I think they're going to come up big in this one Monday night. They're +3 here at home against Baltimore. I think this is going to be the game that turns their season around. And I actually think, I don't know who they're going to knock off, but I think the Rams are going to find a way to get into the playoffs. I like the Rams.
If they're going to get into the playoffs, they better win this game. And as you said, this is a tough one because you're talking about arguably the hottest team in the league with the Ravens, arguably the hottest player in the league in Lamar Jackson. But these are the types of games that put a team into the playoffs or keep them out from the Rams' perspective. So if they're going to make that surge, it's going to have to start with this game against the Ravens. We'll see what they do. I'm on the fence about this one, too, because on paper, you would think that the Ravens are surging and that they should win this. But like you said, the Rams have their backs up against the wall. And sometimes teams do crazy things when they have their backs up against the wall. So this will be an interesting one as well. Now that we've done your individual picks, Craig, let's get into the teaser. Who do you like this week?
All right, so for the teaser, my first pick, again, you know my trend is usually at least go with one of my regular picks in the teaser. Last week, I just lost everything, so it didn't really matter. But this week, I'm going to go with the Jets as my first pick, +10. Again, I really think Jets are going to come up big in this one. I actually see them winning by 2 touchdowns. I know that might sound crazy. Oakland's been good, but I don't know, just the feeling. I just know, you know, traveling cross country can what that can really do to teams, and I just see this being a letdown type of game for Oakland, and I really think the Jets are going to play good. So my first pick in the teaser is going to be the Jets +10, and my second pick is going to be Jacksonville +10.5 against Tennessee. Again, division game. It's on the road, but I see it being a close game, so I think I like Jacksonville +10.5 against Tennessee.
I like both of those picks because Even if the Raiders win, I think it's going to be a relatively close game. And I think the same thing is in play when it comes to Jacksonville and Tennessee. I think Tennessee probably wins that game, but I don't think it's going to be by much. I think it'll probably be a 3 to 7 point differential. So I like both of those picks. That sounds like a good teaser to me. So just to review, Craig's got the Jets and the points. He's got Atlanta, and he's got the Rams against the Ravens. And for his teaser, he's got the Jets plus 10 and the Jaguars plus 10.5. So there are your picks right there. If you want to go ahead and bet them and try and win some money, Craig had an off week last week. But before that, remember, he had won 7 weeks in a row. So he's got a good track record this season. Craig, for anybody that wants to pick your brain about this stuff or anything else in general, how can they get a hold of you?
You can send me a message on Facebook at Craig Mason. And you can also send me an email, cmace86@aol.com. Let's hope I have a bounce back week this week.
Thanks, Craig. Talk to you next week. Now let's end the show with my buddy Ed Valley of Empire Weather. You can follow him on Twitter at Ed Valley, EDVALLEEWX, or at Empire Weather WX. He's here to give his weather report, let us know what we're in store for in this Jets-Raiders game, and then go across the league for a look at the weather in all of your key fantasy football matchups. Ed, what's going on with the weather today?
Thanks, Scott. Meteorologist Ed Valley here with Empire Weather. And we have a weather event to talk about here for Sunday for the Jets game. Jets taking on the Raiders at 1 o'clock. We got a 1 o'clock kickoff in East Rutherford. And boy, the morning, if you're going out to tailgate, bring the rain gear. It's going to be a very nasty November day. We're going to have temperatures in the low 40s. It's just going to be an absolutely nasty morning, warming up slowly with a breezy north wind, 5 to 15 miles an hour during the morning on Sunday. By kickoff, we're looking at about 47 degrees, and we're thinking the rain is going to be ending right around kickoff. Might start the game briefly with a little bit of precip, but I think especially in the end of the first, into the second quarter, we should be done with the rain, and things will continued to improve during the afternoon. But I tell you what, the morning is going to be pretty gross. The game, pretty gross as well. Again, kickoff in the mid to upper 40s. We'll stay in the mid to upper 40s throughout the game with the breezy north wind. So definitely enough where I think the running game can be impacted, which may help the Jets. Josh Jacobs on the other side there, certainly doing his fair share as a rookie. But I think the field conditions, especially early in the game, may be a little bit dicey. Second half of the game, things should improve. Elsewhere around the league, the only other game we're watching, also in the Northeast, the Patriots. They have a little bit later of a start. They're starting at 4:25. They're playing the Cowboys, our lovely Cowboys. And looks like rain and wind will impact that game as well. So if you have any sort of playmaker on your fantasy team for the Patriots or the Cowboys, I think rain has to be considered here, and the field conditions really might not be that great. So that's what we have for you this week. Let's see if the Jets can make it 3 in a row. Back to you, Scott.
Ed, thanks so much. Great job as always. If you're not following Ed on Twitter, you really should. He's at Ed Valley, VALLEEWX, and also at Empire Weather WX. If you want to know what's going on weather-wise in your area or anywhere else in the country, Ed is a must-follow, and if you want to interact with him about weather or the Jets or anything else, you can hit him on Twitter. But he is the best in the biz when it comes to weather forecasts, so I'm really glad that he is a part of the Play Like a Jet pregame report every week here on the show. Thanks again to Chris, Craig, Dr. Stoller, and Ed for joining me. Don't forget, if you enjoy the show and you haven't done this already, if you could go ahead over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, that would be awesome. It doesn't take you much time. It doesn't cost you any money, but it really helps out a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for listening, and for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. It's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.